You paren when it starts. I know you got smarts. Zipping up my bits, I'm a bandwidth shop. Can your browser store cache? Nah, you need mine, cause I'm a download hardware motherboard running with your Ajax.
Hello, you are listening to the Modern Web Podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee, at LeeDeLeet on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.org.
Your first line of code needs a node.
Restart.
Reboot.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead.
What you write
this on? First of all, how do you say your name?
Sakoni.
That's like, what I thought, but I didn't want to butcher it.
Everyone does.
No, I was going to say that.
No, you would have been right.
But I was like, but then I'd say that, and you'd be like, no, it's Sakoni or something. And I'd be like, damn it. All right. Hello. My name is Ben Lesh, and I'm here with Sam Sakoni for Modern Web Podcast, and we're kind of doing this impromptu. Sam, we're at ngConf right now, and you're here to do a talk. Can you tell us what your talk's about?
Sure. So I'm doing a talk on the history of promises from 1961 to present day, basically.
1961.
Yeah.
They had computers in 1961.
They had really awesome computers. Like, we were sending chimps into space and people into space.
Sure.
So computers were a thing. They looked a little different, but they were around.
Did chimps use promises?
Yeah, I think the chimp got resolved, like, from, it was in a right. couple states. Outer space state, yeah.
Sure. So how does the history of, I mean, where was anything even called a promise before the modern day, like, A plus promise?
Yeah, the first promise word was sort of introduced in 95 in a language called E, and everything latched on to that promise spec moving forward. There were other things like futured and eventuals and all kinds of crazy terms, but the idea of a value that eventually gets resolved to like the actual value, that idea has been around since the 60s.
Cool. So I actually get a rap sometimes for people think I'm a person that does not like promises because I work on Rx, and you know, there's a crowd that just wants to observable all the things.
Of course.
But prior to that, I think there was a crowd that wanted to promise all the things. So can you tell us, like, what are the main ways that you feel promises are useful?
So promises, in my mind, are most useful when you're dealing with coordinating multiple asynchronous things that eventually will have a value but don't yet have a value. So the traditional example is a network request. You have a network request, it's going to end up in two finite states, a resolved state or a rejected state due to some sort of error. And it gets hard when you want to coordinate, you know, six network requests. You get a user ID, and then from that user ID you request some information, you request more and more information based on the subsequent request.
Right.
So organizing that before promises was, you had a huge callback chain, as many of us remember, and it was just nasty, and you had some state that, some like object that you would say, like, I've resolved, I've finished, and you would call into this like accumulator object each time, which didn't really work so well. So
right.
Then like jQuery came along, introduced their deferred objects, which was more of a callback aggregator, which was great for kind of like knowing when everything is done or rejected, but not so great for creating a pipeline of actions.
Right. So the name, in my opinion, the thing that I like promises the best for is for any async thing that I want some sort of guarantee that it's going to be done or it's going to err. Right.
It's going to run to completion. Right. That's like the computer science term for it.
Right. Well, that's in the name, right?
Yeah.
That's what they call it, a promise. So what do you, in contrast, what do you think about observables and? That's because it's a different async type.
It is.
It's lazy. It's not just wrapping something that's already been called, for example. But what are your opinions on those things? Do you have any that you've formulated while you're building up this talk?
Yeah. A lot of my experience has been in Node's primitive stream library, which I know streams are slightly different from observables, but there's a lot of value in getting, you know, basically a stream of data and being able to operate on chunks of that data and then passing on that stream. Obviously, streams sort of fall apart when you try and handle errors or you want to duplex or multiplex the stream, it gets nasty, and there's tons of great libraries out there to help with that. And like Rx, in my opinion, builds on top of this idea of like multiple events are emitted over time and we want to operate on them, but we're not sure if it's ever going to stop or whatever. We just know that we're going to get events.
Right.
So they're totally different use cases, like you said.
Yeah.
And they both have a place. But
yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think that I like observables a lot, but I think observables are probably more broadly useful in like a UI because they push values. And like a node server, they're still useful, but not quite as useful because they don't really handle like a back pressure quite as well. Where like if you have like an iterator of promise or an async iterator, you've got that semantic of I'm going to get this next thing, then you get it. Now I'm ready for another one and so on. So you can handle back pressure. But yeah, I mean, there are some things that promises just make sense for. We actually use promises for like the return value for each, for example, in Rx, where you can subscribe to an observable and there's no way to cancel it. So you're guaranteed that it's going to resolve, and promise is perfect for that.
Sure.
Well, how do you feel about cancelable promises? That's a controversial topic.
So Mark Miller, who wrote the implementation for E and wrote the paper on the language, actually has a method called smash on his promise implementation. And the idea of smash was you would have this promise, it would be in some state that was not yet determined, and you could smash it and get rid of it. And in my mind, cancelable promises are really useful. Like, so the idiomatic example in modern web development, in my opinion, is fetch.
Mm-hmm.
Fetch, in like an app I'm building right now, I fire off so many fetch events, but a lot of times the user's on a page, you know, and then they change pages in the single page app. And all my fetch requests are still in flight. And so I'd say, oh, it'd be really great if I could just terminate. Like with XHR, you just cancel it and you're done and it gets hung up on the client.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But with fetch, there's no cancel. And there's a huge thread online about like why it's not. And so you have to cancel it as soon as you get a response from the server.
Is it useful because it's eventable with cancellation? Is that why?
Well, it would be useful if it was eventable with cancellation, but there is no cancel in promises. So I feel like if promises had a cancel like primitive support, or a state that they could enter to be canceled, that'd be so useful.
All right, so the next question is obviously why not an observable of one, if cancellation is the thing that you're looking for?
Well, if I wanted to wrap fetch as an observable, then that'd be good.
Right.
It's a matter of embracing the platform versus building on top of the platform. So with the modern web manifesto is we give people primitives, and from the primitives we can reconstruct everything. And fetch, in my opinion, doesn't give us enough primitives. Like, as soon as we get the response from the server, we have, you know, you can control everything. You can control how you parse it, how you handle the response, the streamed response from the server.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have control starting out. And I think it's a little bit of a blind spot in the spec. And the community is making their voice heard, so. But you're right. Like, it could be converted into an observable, and then I would have cancellation. But what happens under the hood? I'm not using fetch anymore.
Right.
I use XHR.
Yeah, I don't know. I actually don't like cancelable promises that much. And the reason is because I like promises how they are. Like, I like promises as a guarantee, like the name promise. Like, if someone gives me a promise, I know that one of two things is going to happen. And I feel like if anyone that has a handle to a promise can cancel it, and I give a promise to like five or six different consumers, any one of them could cancel it and actually like kind of mutate what's going on with their siblings that aren't supposed to know about them, right?
Yeah, the question becomes, what are the semantics around when someone cancels it? What happens to everything that's attached? Does it just no up? Everything doesn't act? I agree that like potentially it opens the door for weird mutated objects, weird mutation that you can't track where it's happening. And you know, we saw this in Chrome for a while. There was a promise.defer. You could create a deferred promise that was basically an object that had a resolve and reject function.
Yeah.
But that has been dropped.
Because you can, because then all of a sudden you can leak that out to anywhere you want. Just be like, here's my resolver.
Yeah, and you can mutate. You can mutate the state of the promise from anywhere.
Right.
You manually resolve it versus the promise constructor, where you do new promise and have the resolver reject. I don't know. The argument of canceling a promise, opening the door for more complexity, I think is valid. But I think that there's a place to cancel work if you just don't want it to happen anymore. And, you know, a way to do that is via guard clause or a precondition inside of your handler logic. Like, you would set a bit to canceled.
Yeah.
And then if canceled, return.
And then you're in the same boat, though, because somebody else can set that bit. See, the thing is, like, promises are awesome because of that guarantee, in my opinion. Like, where if you want a guarantee like that, you use a promise. Don't use an RX observable. Like, don't do that. If you want a guarantee, use a promise. And I think if you want that, if you don't care about the guarantee and you don't care if like multiple folks might be able to like mutate what's going on, then you could use like an RX observable, because it's gonna, like, someone could just have the subscription and unsubscribe from it.
Sure.
Or whatever. So.
Yeah, I acknowledge your point on cancellation. However, at the same time, I think that there is a use case for a subset of things, like network requests are a definite use case. I want to cancel my open socket to the server. I want to be able to control that. And since the fetch primitive returns a promise,
right,
it probably should expose a way so I can cancel it. It seems like a big hole in the spec, like the official promise, the original ancestry of promises has cancellation.
Right.
Not
right.
Saying that it's the best thing, but I don't know. I think it has a place.
Sure. There's another primitive, actually, Stefan Penner's working on cancellation tokens. So the idea that you could have a cancellation token and you could pass it around to any number of async things, and they could somehow register themselves with that, and then you could say cancellation token, cancel all these things.
Sure.
That, of course, could result in, you know, a bit more of what we were talking about before, but... That's an additional idea. What do you think about the idea of a cancellation token?
Yeah, so it's like an interface that you can choose to opt into using, like...
Right. Just if you pass an optional cancellation token in to your promise or whatever, then...
Yeah, it seems okay. I mean, the parallel with this is progress events on promises. A lot of primitive promise implementations, or like userland promise implementations, have progress, which can be useful.
Mm-hmm.
Official promises don't have it. And it's this idea of state, like we're passing around this little state bubble that obviously anytime we introduce state, it gets crazy.
Right, right. Yeah.
Like, there's more complexity and people are gonna disagree. It's like, why is it, keep it simple.
Was progress originally going to be in the spec? Where did we leave off then? We left off, we were talking about cancelable promises, right?
Yeah.
And I'm camp, cancelable promises are probably not good. And your camp, we probably need them because of fetch.
Yes.
That's an accurate portrayal.
Operations that are detrimental if you don't cancel them. Like, you have a limited number of open connections in a browser, right? So if I can't cancel my fetch, that means that my future requests are going to be held up.
Right, but like, I get that about fetch, but okay. I don't know if it's worth diluting like a type. Like, if somebody gives me a promise, like, I like to know that nobody else is going to cancel that promise. Like, that's like the value of the promise, right? Is I've gotten this thing and I'm guaranteed that it's either going to resolve or reject at some point. But if there's some bit of mutable something out in the wilderness that someone could be like, nope, sorry. Like, I feel like it takes that guarantee away. And maybe it's an irrational thing, but like, I always thought of that as like one of the stronger points of the promise type, was that guarantee. In fact, it was so strong that they named it a promise. And if you can cancel it, then it's just a dirty lie. It's not a promise.
No, you just cancel subsequent work. You don't cancel the promise. I think thinking of it as like you're flipping the state is incorrect way to think about it.
So, like, with async, there's three ways that async things end. One, the producer notifies the consumer that it's successfully completed. Two, the producer notifies the consumer that it's completed, but there was a problem. There's an error. Mm-hmm. And three, if you have cancellation, the consumer says, I no longer care about this.
Correct.
Right? And, like, promises only ever embodied two of those things, which is why they're promises. They cannot be canceled. They're guaranteed that they're going to resolve. And it was determined early on that, well, now I don't know how early on, but a fairly like a while ago, that the whole deferred pattern wasn't good because you're leaking two of those notification points out to God knows where, right?
That's correct.
But now we're talking about leaking that third point out of the promise. And, like, I get that that happens in observable and other cancelable types. And, you know, maybe they need something that's not a promise. Maybe they need something not an observable, like a single value cancelable thing that is eager, like, right? But I would hate if I thought, like, oh, I'm using this API, it's giving me a promise, but I don't really know what it's going to do, because I don't know if, like, inside of this library somewhere, it's a cancelable promise, or somebody else has a handle to it. And that's kind of hand-wavy, right? Like,
no, I mean, that's
probably not really going to happen, but, like, I feel like just for the strength of the type, it's maybe not a good choice.
And that's sort of the appeal of promises, the primitive idea of promises, not in JavaScript, but in other languages, is that, well, if you put, someone puts a while loop somewhere deep in a chain of promises, and they do while one, whatever, nothing proceeds, everything locks up.
Right.
Okay, so that still can happen today with promises in JavaScript.
Sure.
Now, given the potential of workers and web workers and basically giving work off to them, that stops being a big concern because we have distributed promises. Now, this cancellation state that we could enter, we have this idea of, let's say we push work into a worker. Say, okay, give me n number digits of pi. Cool.
Go do it.
Now, if you're a consumer on the page, it's like here doing some stuff, and like they leave the page, the pi computation page. Now that worker's still going. So what do you do as a developer? Like, I don't care. I don't want that worker to do anything. Do I unregister, like, my subscription to that worker? Do I tell it to, like, die? But if I have an interface that's a promise to the worker, like, it's not going to throw.
Right.
I don't know what how you
probably handle that. A promise was, like, the wrong choice for a primitive type in that scenario. Like,
but there are situations where you want to cancel something. You want to stop. You want to say, I stop doing what you're doing.
Right.
Just, and I think fetch is one of them. So right. Would you say that fetch is the wrong, or promise was the wrong interface to fetch?
I think it might have been, considering, like, how fetch is used on single page applications. So if your application wasn't a single page, like, and you were just going to dump everything anyways, when soon someone navigated to the next view, then who cares? Like, it's just going to die. So here's another thing about cancelable promises. So, like, right now, as you said, you could have a promise with just a while loop in it, or you could even, someone could write a promise and never call resolve or reject.
Yep.
And you have this never promise.
Right? Well, it's very different than the while loop case, because the never promise won't block. It won't block your event loop.
Right.
The while loop will block the event loop. Everything stops.
Right. Where the never promise is just, it's never going to resolve or whatever.
But everything stays in memory.
Right.
Because everything's retained. It's not going to garbage collect these chained objects because they're still referenced.
Right. So, like, it makes me wonder about implications for, like, if a promise is cancelable, do we need more combinators on promises other than just try and catch? Like, finally seems like it would be very valuable in a situation like that.
Well, we've all done the dot catch. Do some work to, like, propagate the error outside of it, and then put a then at the very end.
Right.
And it's, like, super dirty, and then sometimes you rethrow the error, and it's very strange.
Right.
To emulate that finally better.
But, right. But, yeah, like a finally seems like it would be important, or even a finally in continue with sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
If you cancel this, then I want to do this other thing. But there's not, like, I don't really see a straightforward way to do that with a cancelable promise. Like, I think that it dilutes the type, and I think that it has maybe broader implications than people realize that really want cancelable promises. I think on the surface, it seems like a good idea because people think, oh, promises are everywhere. But, you know, I just think that I'm not saying observables or, you know, CSP or anything. Just I think that there's other async types that are out there that are seem exotic right now because promises are everywhere. But promises were exotic once. And maybe there's a better type with cancellation to handle those scenarios. So you could programmatically tell the difference between one and the other. You've given me a promise and I know it's going to resolve. You've given me a, you know, SAM object or whatever we call it, a task, and I don't know if it's going to resolve or not. It could be a little mutable inside of what's going on.
If promises were cancelable, so let's just run this hypothetical.
All right.
I can see, okay, potential case. You kick off a promise doing some work, and it changes some state outside of itself. But then you have, in your chain, you have something that fixes the state or, you know, resets it. So the global state is no longer mutated or, you know, block scope is not messed up here.
Sure.
And if you were to cancel it somewhere in between there, that state would never get reset and you're all messed up.
Mm.
Okay. So I can no longer guarantee that the subsequent calls are going to be executed. Yeah, that makes sense. However, I would say that if you're relying on your promises to always trickle down, then you've written your promise chain and you've written something incorrectly because any promise at any state can throw.
Okay.
And therefore they skip the subsequent thens and they go to the closest catch. And if there's no catch, then an exception is raised. Well, now an exception is raised.
Right. It was just...
silent and bad. So I guess I'm not buying this like cancelable thing is bad and evil because if we cancel it, it's like we threw. But
I don't think it's evil. I think that I'm not all in. Like I don't see it as like a really good thing either.
Are you saying because we can't react to a cancelable state?
I think that's part of it. I think part of it is the fact that. I felt like the strength, I still feel like the strength of promises is the guarantee. And there, like you have like...
There is no guarantee.
Right. Well, assuming that whoever wrote it was okay, like... Fair. There's no guarantee with like, I could give you a function and it could throw or it could do something or... Right.
Totally.
Like there's no guarantee with any of it. But the idea is that there's a guarantee conceptually... If in a perfect world,
the only guarantee is the then catch pipeline. You're establishing a pipeline that you can represent in code, and you don't have to hold on to variables and manually look at the state of everything. That's the guarantee. Is that if one of these states occurs, I know that my catch is going to get hit, or my then is going to get hit, or potentially nothing is going to happen.
Right.
But I mean, I remember in Backbone days and earlier where I would have like this concept of a view or whatever, and I would render it and I'd set up event listeners, and then I would destroy the view or something would render or data would change, and that event listener would still be bound to something that didn't exist anymore, or like some long running function would be happening, a data and a model would change, and it'd like try and touch the DOM, that DOM didn't exist anymore, and things would blow up. So what I ended up doing is putting in guard clauses. Like we talked about earlier, it's like, okay, now we put guard clauses in to handle this weird, like, canceled state where it really shouldn't be there anymore. I just think that there is a place to just terminate work, to just say, give up, everything can be garbage collected and everything can be cleaned up. Now, are there other patterns that we could use to do that? I mean, like, an event emitter... Event registration is good because when you want to cancel that, you unregister the listener, okay? Which is parallel to observables, like we subscribe and I unsubscribe, but like that guy can still be firing, I just don't care about it anymore.
Right.
So it'd be nice to have a parallel in promises, but I think it would be a useful thing in a lot of primitive APIs that right now aren't cancelable. Don't expose that. Fetch being the one that I think is on my mind because I deal with it every day.
I wrap all my stuff in observables, man. so, all right, let's switch gears a little bit. Promises in Node.
Promises in Node, yeah.
So there was, I wouldn't necessarily call it a stink. There was a back and forth about promises in Node, and like I guess that my vague understanding of this is there were some Node APIs people were talking about having return promises.
The pull requests on Node that's still open.
And the folks at Netflix in particular that are Node experts, they do not want promises to be returned from these APIs because promises by default try catch all errors. They will trap all errors so they can send it down the promise chain. There's no like an unsafe then that you could do. And consequently, that ruins how they debug because the Node folks would rather, at least a lot of them, would rather just panic and let it like, oh, you've got an error, I'm not gonna catch it. I'm just gonna let the Node process stop immediately. And then it's gonna give me this nice core dump that I can analyze later of exactly the state of everything when that error happened. Right. So that's the big back and forth.
That's interesting.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
So I know DevTools, Chrome DevTools, and V8 have been working on this exact problem of like async stack traces, and they've instrumented, but put the hooks into V8 where this is no longer a problem, as far as I understand.
So it's not the stack traces though.
It's
the actual memory state, like the state of what things were, like the actual dump.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in this, but I think that is now possible to reconstitute that. DevTools does it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So that's a new development. I hadn't heard that
before. It is very new. Yeah. So,
is this like top secret Sam Saccone knowledge? Or
no, it's not top secret. I mean, it's in V8.
You've got that sometimes. You have a little bit of, especially Node-related top secret.
You just sort of walk downstairs and say, hey, Paul, what's going on? He's like, oh, you know, just did this. I say, oh, that's cool. And then I know.
Right. So the top secret knowledge that I think is the beans have all been spilled about that now, that you had told me about one time before. This is the NPM security vulnerability.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a fun one.
So you discovered that?
Yeah, I did.
You discovered. Can you tell the folks at home what the NPM security vulnerability was in a nutshell?
Sure. It still is. Well, some people, the official Nerd Rage, that sounds too aggressive.
I like it. Nerd Rage. Go
ahead. Yeah, okay. The official Nerd Rage response is, of course it works this way. That's the whole power of them. Fair. My point was, most people did not know about this. So this was it. In a post-install script in NPM, you can execute anything you want. Like, you can install more stuff, you can compile your stuff, etc., etc. Now, most people, when they use NPM and they publish stuff, they do NPM login, and they stay logged in forever because there's no expiration on it. And there's no, like, two-factor auth or whatever. You're logged in, and you're forever logged in unless you log out. And then you have to actually go into NPM's website and revoke your credentials, like your token. Otherwise, the token is still valid, which is okay. So what someone can do is, in a post-install hook, they can run npm publish, so they can republish your own stuff. And it's not republish, they have to bump this ember and then do that. But what we saw with Leftpad was, well, this happened around the same time, is that Leftpad debacle happened, and then someone else took it and published it again. But everyone realized, like, wait a minute, they could have published anything, and because everyone's dependency was squiggly line or caret, they could have pushed any code into my code base. Okay, that was one example. Now imagine a malicious actor publishes something, gets a hold of someone's account with this like worm, and then publishes over your version, just bumps the bug fix sender, so everybody gets it unless they have it shrink-wrapped and locked down. And then what that worm does is it spreads and spreads and spreads. And that's like the idea in a nutshell, but I think it's like compounded and made a lot worse because of the way people write modules nowadays, where everything is interconnected. Like, the big reason why Leftpad broke the internet is because it broke Babel.
Right. So the Leftpad thing is where the guy unpublished his NPM repository for Leftpad, and like all these other little libraries depended on Leftpad, and then other libraries depended on those libraries and so on. So
everyone's build broke, but like the truth is it was mostly because of Babel. Babel had a dependency on Leftpad, and so when Babel broke, most people's automated CI process broke because they can no longer compile. And then because Leftpad was like unpublished, it required Babel to be updated and every single Babel package to be updated, and it was a big mess.
Right.
It broke the internet.
So the security vulnerability would then be that, let's just say that for some reason I am able to publish somebody else's small repository that is used all over the place. I could publish a post-install script that ran any arbitrary code, including republishing whatever anybody else has, like, locally in that repository. And it would just, like, be viral. So you would publish a package that when someone installed it caused them to automatically publish their package.
Yep.
Probably having rewritten something to do exactly the same thing for anyone that installs that package and so on.
Exactly.
And it's like a really, really, really horrible security hole. So log out of NPM, folks. That's
NPM logout is good. But I know NPM is working on several, the security people are working on several things based on community feedback, which is great, to enable two-factor auth and basically lock down your account more to plug this hole, sort of. But the safe thing to do is not stay logged into NPM because it's a very scary thing.
That's good stuff.
What else? We covered everything.
We did.
Everything in the world.
What about me? Do you have any questions for me?
He's
like, no. No. You don't like cancelable promises. I'm not talking
about that. I don't know. When did you take over RX?
Oh, so this is the story of that is... Shortly after I started at Netflix, I was taken aside by Eric Meyer and Jafar Hussein and Ben Christensen, these guys from the ReactiveX community, and they're like, hey, do you want to try to rewrite like our own version of RX? Because we have this set of concerns about debuggability and performance and that sort of thing. And I'm like, what? I didn't feel like I was the most qualified for it, certainly. But I was like, sure, I'll do that. And the truth is that I think that at the time, Matt Podwasecki didn't really, like, at the time we didn't really, we're really planning on like, oh, we're going to publish like a new version of RX. And then once we saw like some momentum with this, then these folks in the ReactiveX community, they talked to Matt and they were like, you know, we'd like to do this as the next version of our RxJS. And I feel like at the time, and I'm sure that he'll say the same thing, that might have blindsided him a little bit. I didn't really understand. I'm just like, oh, look at me, I'm happy and I'm working on a library. It's all popular, isn't that cool? You know, like, so it's interesting, but... You know, fortunately, it's worked out really well. We're able to. I mean, it's a new major version, so it's completely different than the old version.
Sure.
And the community's growing quite a bit. And Matt is, of course, still the creator. Like, he comes and does his huge talks, and he's a big personality, and everybody loves Matt. This wizard hat.
It's a great wizard hat.
So I wouldn't say, like, I know that I've been doing all of the RX5 stuff. I'm not the owner of the wizard hat, though. Like, I've corrected people a few times in other like podcasts and stuff. Like, so you're the creator of RxJS? It's like, no, I might have created RxJS 5, but That was done in a community effort, and you know, Matt created RxJS 4 and 3 and 2 and 1.
Are you seeing a rise in other Rx-like libraries?
Yeah. I mean, Andre Staltz, he wrote his own like kind of micro-observable library, and he actually contributes to RxJS 5 too. There's a lot of them out there. I'm hoping that they all, at the very least, implement the symbol observable, which is part of the observable spec. And the idea with that is it's just to provide some sort of interop. So if I see an object and it has symbol observable on it, I can call a method and get back an observable that fits a certain contract. So I know how to read values from that observable type and subscribe to it.
Is there a common test suite that people run against?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know that there is, unless Zen Parsing might have one. I know that he has some tests, but I don't really know. Like, I think that a lot of his tests are around, like, here's tests for my spec. Like, I don't think it's a test for any sort of, like, interop compliance.
Do you think that there is, like, with Angular 2, using, like, basically everything around observables and more people latching on, do you think that there might be value in, you know, the similar path of the A+ spec for promises, but one for observables to get community buy-in and to show, you know, standards committees like, hey, this might be a good thing to roll in.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, weirdly enough, even though when you look at observables and you think, oh, there are multiple values and there's three different handlers and there's all these composable ways that people use them in Rx and other libraries, like, I think that a spec compliance suite for something being observable would actually probably be much smaller than, say, like an A+. Because A+, I think the promise spec has a little bit more nuance to it about, like, what the different methods have to be on it and how they need to behave in certain scenarios where, I mean, observables really, when you shake it right down, are functions that take an observer and do things and return a subscription. So, you know, there's no, like, async guarantees and things like that. But yeah, I think there would be value in that, for sure.
Yeah, it seems like the potential to kind of push. I mean, there's streams in the browser today which feel similar to Rx. I mean, I know they're not exactly the same, but they feel similar. So it'd be interesting to see if that could be sellable at TC39. Be like, what if streams implemented observables, or observables were usable with streams,
right,
to provide people with a slightly nicer interface?
Yeah, so I mean, theoretically, if everything has its own little symbol that you can, like a symbol iterator is today, then you could have stream be like, well, if I'm making a stream in with, you know, I'm passing some object to like a stream from, and it would be like, oh, well, does this object have symbol observable on it? Well, I know what to do. And that's what we're trying to do with observable from. So observable from in Rx handles promises, it handles iterables, it handles other observables, and async iterators, or async iterables are another thing that I'm going to add in the near future. I started spiking out a branch to do that, and I got pulled into something else, but the idea being that you say observable from, and you give it some type, and it would just kind of know what to do.
Feels a lot like what Bluebird and Q did with Promisify. Give me a thing.
There was an issue actually for like the Promisify thing where you could be like, oh, give me this, like take some, like the file system in Node or whatever and like change it to all be
Promisify. All. Yeah.
So there was I think Benjamin Grunbaum was asking for that in an issue. So well, hey, it's it's been really awesome talking with you. This has been one of the best technical podcasts I've ever been involved in, because contrary to popular belief, I do like promises. cancelable promises, I don't hate them.
I mean, observables,
yeah, I don't hate those either. They're okay.
I used them like twice.
Okay. All right. Sam Ciccone, thank you for coming on our podcast.
Thanks, Ben.
This line, cause it's do or do not, and there ain't no try. Yeah, I'm coding. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. To find more podcasts, videos, and online conferences, check out modern-web.org or find us on Twitter at modernweb_. See you around the internet. If you wanna see me, I'm on IRC and I'm coding. Arg. To Hixie, my brother, I'm throwing an exceptional HTML5 gang sign for you. Coding.